The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Good morning and welcome to this Fresh FM meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous On Air. I'm Kim and I'm an alcoholic and I'm your chair for this morning. We will open the meeting with the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allies with any sect, denomination, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The topic of this meeting this morning is Step 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Lee, can I ask you to open the sharing, please?
Thank you. Hi, my name's Lee and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lee.
Thanks for having me today. And I'm thinking of all you listeners out there that who hear this on the radio. Hopefully those who need to get something out of it for their good. So step eight. Yeah, it took me a long time to write a list of people that I had harmed. However, it began, the process began really early. I started off in AA as I was turning 22 and I was really bitter. I didn't think I had a lot of resentments, but I certainly had some really intense ones of a small few. So firstly, I just came to meetings and I did call somebody every day who kind of took me under their wing and guided me with that process. I had a young child under five in my care the majority of the time, and drinking just wasn't working anymore, and I was just struggling to cope with life as it was. So I was more than might not necessarily have been happy about using, you know, sort of thinking, you know, about being an alcoholic. But it just got to the point where I couldn't imagine life with it and I couldn't imagine life without it. And I just wanted to feel better. And so I was just led basically. So one of the things that I was led with was, and this is, you know, it's different for everyone. However, for me, I started praying for the people that I resented the most in the shower in the mornings, and it did help, although it didn't feel it instantly. But I heard from other people that if I did that or was willing to try, I may start to feel better. So I was willing to try. Yeah, so I had some discipline around that because I did not feel good. And I didn't necessarily want to stop drinking, but the thinking was out of control. So I did hear other recovering alcoholics with some peace. So I heard what some people were saying, that it will get easier, you know, and listen to people whose lives were a bit better and they didn't need a drink. So I did my best. And after a few years, a small few years, I did a fearless and thorough moral inventory out of the big book. I felt very ashamed because I didn't do that early on. That's just how it was for me. My mind was too foggy and my life was very unmanageable. So it happened when it happened, but I did do it, me and the big book and pen and paper. And after that, I've always been guided to just stay in today and just stay away from that first drink no matter what. And just take it one step at a time. And that's been huge for me because the thoughts can go right into the fear, you know, of of all sorts of things, in particular, not wanting to make amends to anyone that I felt had wronged me. However, I've trusted the process and eventually, you know, I did do that inventory, shared myself with another person, and then took step 6 and 7 in my own way and step 8. So after that inventory and my own little process of 6 and 7, which were amazing, by the way, I gave myself, you know, a little bit of time, and I quietly read some literature around step 8, in particular the 12 steps and 12 traditions of AA. And that's what I've come to have some faith in. I find many answers in AA literature, and that's a huge part of my faith. I don't necessarily trust people. However, I am guided by people to where to look. And for me, you know, there's so much in our literature. And so that guided me to make a list. And I made that list from my inventory. And that didn't mean I needed to go and make amends right then and there. Certainly not. Yeah, so I've just trusted the process. And certainly before making that list, I did make some amends quite early on in the piece. But certainly the list brought about the willingness to own my part in things face to face with people if that was meant to happen. Because it's about doing so, except when to do so would injure them or others. So basically, all step 8 asked of me was to make a list of persons I had harmed. And for some of those, it's taken a long time to even become willing. And there have been people that I've looked for and not found them. And there are people on my list whom I'm willing if it's ever meant to be. But it may not ever meant to be because of the risks. And that's okay. But I have made many amends. And thinking about it now, there are still some things. It's not just people, it's situations. And I'm not alone with having to work out how's the best way for Lee to make, you know, some living amends, because I remember doing something quite young and it would have harmed a number of people, just dynamics in the community, and that building, that organisation is no longer there anymore. So there are other creative ways, and I learn that from other people in recovery. I learn it from all sorts of things in the community. So I don't really need to work a lot out. I just need to trust the process and just focus on my recovery one day at a time and staying away from that first drink. So I too would say to anyone, just, you know, no need to go there yet. It's just staying in today and trusting the process. But I've always heard, you know, the fellowship can help someone stay sober for a while. People can stay sober on the shirt tails of others for a while, but it's the steps that will change someone's world through that inside job. So it's given me a good life and it continues to. And I don't always read some of that literature that I've read. However, because of this topic, you know, I have had a wee read this morning and it helps me with, you know, my current day-to-day life. So I wouldn't change this in my life for the world. And I know that for alcoholics, it works like nothing else works. And if other things work, that's amazing. But it works for me. And all the very best to anyone who is struggling with that age-old dilemma of alcohol. Thank you.
Thanks, Lee.
You're listening to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on air. If you want more information or help to stop drinking, please call 0800 229 6757 or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Hi, Anne, would you like to share, please?
I'm Anne and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Anne.
Sadly, becoming or admitting to being an alcoholic was something I absolutely dreaded and actually didn't realize for a long time. I was a binge drinker, and all my mates were binge drinkers. It was fun when we were young. There were huge spaces between my drinking, and the alcoholics in my family were all men. They could quickly drink me under the table, so I thought because I had very little capacity and got very sick, which should have been a clue, that I couldn't possibly be an alcoholic. And it was when my youngest brother was dying of alcoholism that a good friend got me into Al-Anon, where I learned a lot more about the actual disease entity of alcoholism. And there were a number of members of Al-Anon that were also alcoholics because they lived and associated or had family members that were alcoholics. And they urged me to have a go at AA. I came into the rooms. I came in late. I left early. I came to learn how to drink without any consequences or without being ill and planned to give it a month or two. That was 36 years ago, and I'm still learning. But ultimately, listening to the people in the rooms, the warmth, the kindness, the bright eyes, the laughter, I was in such misery and so fearful. And my life looked very normal on the outside, but internally, I was often had suicidal thoughts. I got very sick when I drank. I wanted the misery to end. I was never arrested. I wasn't a gutter drunk. And most of the people I associated with had no idea that I had a problem. They just knew that I overdid it sometimes because I hid, I planned, and I just would get to a certain point of stress and misery and want to annihilate myself. It wasn't for fun past my teen years. And ultimately, I started to really pay attention instead of looking around the rooms and taking everybody else's inventory, as we say. If you didn't have good English or my fashion sense, I could focus on you instead of me. But it was just the caring and the evidence of people getting well that kept me there. And I started to get a lot more honest and realize, although I didn't cheat on my husband, I didn't steal, I constantly put on a show for everybody. I manipulated and coerced people to do what I wanted them to do, including my children. And I withdrew when things got too tough and then tried to very safely plan a bender when no one would be around to find me. Ultimately, of course, that broke down on a few occasions. And the last was a surprise party where I didn't have time to plan or hide, and completely humiliated myself in front of all my coworkers. And that was the day that I decided that I probably couldn't drink. There was no figuring out how to do it right. Working through the steps seemed like a very daunting endeavor. However, I just kept being reminded to take them one at a time, a day at a time, along with the abstinence from alcohol. And I had to learn a lot more about thinking clearly and thinking cleanly, not ruminating over things and winding myself up. I was very addicted to, I guess, anxiety, just the energy I felt like I had when I was really under a lot of pressure. I didn't sleep well in the sense of amends. I mean, I never beat my children. I was a fairly decent citizen on the outside, but on the inside, I was a mess. And I withheld an awful lot of time, energy, affection from people that I loved when I started really taking a conscious look at how I was actually living my life. Fear became the overwhelming emotion, and all I wanted to do was escape. I made 2 suicide attempts quite drunk, late at night. Fortunately, I was drunk enough that I wasn't able to execute either without some rather humorous consequences. I won't go into that. But the first few years really showed me how sick I'd been, how unwell emotionally and especially spiritually. I had given up on religion. All those rules and regulations were just another thing for me to rebel against. I guess I really felt responsible for everything myself. I know some people feel like they threw responsibility to the wind, but I took on the weight of the world. There were so many things, looking back, that I could have made much, much better choices for myself, my family, even those friends that are close to me. And that's where I had to make some pretty serious amends. There were little odds and ends, you know, not returning a book or things that weren't of huge consequence. But as long as I was aware of it, I felt like I had to remedy it. And there were thoughts and feelings towards people. We're very clear that we don't make amends at other people's expense, that we don't do anything that harms them. But I found when I could confront some of my less kind feelings and admit to them to someone I cared about, that we got closer. It's an interesting process. And it's one that I go over and over and over with, depending upon what the day brings. I always feel like I have guidance from a higher power now where I didn't even believe in one. And I've seen the evidence in the rooms of AA and felt the care and support of everybody there. So I'll keep coming back. Thanks.
Thanks, Anne.
Can't remember what you did last night or every night? Drinking causing you problems? Call Alcoholics Anonymous on 0800 229 6757 or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Hi, Ray, would you like to share, please?
Yeah, thanks, Kim. My name is Ray and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ray.
I've suddenly got overcome with nervousness, which is weird. I haven't had a drink for over 5 years now, which is fantastic. I feel a bit out of touch with being in a meeting because I've since had my young son return custody for me, return into my care, because for a long time I was unable to care for him and my daughters. And I was nervous at everything, and I used to drink to be okay. This meeting, I think, is loosely based on the step 8, which is making a list of people you've harmed. There's a lot of people I've harmed, mainly my children, which is something I think you can, if you make a list, if you can, you can only sort of make amends by being a living amends, a daily living amends, and by not drinking and living the proper way, which is what I think I can do. There's other people on my list that are in jail or dead. And so it's sort of the best way I can make amends for my past alcoholic way of life, my active drinking way of life, is to live properly these days. I still get a bit overwhelmed because I'm not drunk. I get a bit overwhelmed because I'm living a decent life now with regular normal people, which I didn't used to think they existed. Everybody in my life drank or did drugs, or nobody was not affected by drugs or alcohol in some way. And now I'm learning to live in a world and a society where people don't drink and they don't do drugs and we're basic, upstanding, basic people that do good and are useful. And I've got a job. I'm not in the court system for anything wrong. I can eat nice food and be social, and I'm legal and I can enjoy life now. Life was so different. I don't really remember much of my first few meetings because I think I was probably drunk. I know if there's anyone out there listening with a bottle in your hand, you don't have to do it. You don't, you know, if I can stop drinking and be part of this life in this world, which is still a little bit scary, you know, if I can do it, anyone can do it. It's, it's amazing how different and how much of a change my life has had. And, you know, the people in AA, I don't even know how I sort of tripped into there or landed there, but I did. And, you know, they're some of the best people I've ever met in my life, and they're actually kind of cool. They're big and small and old and young and all different colours and all, you know, pretty cool, intelligent people. They're not judgmental or, you know, and I just about swore then just to prove that I could, but, you know, there's no rules. Nobody tells you that you have to go to a meeting or you don't have to. And, you know, I mean, I remember leaving a meeting once, I think in my early, early days where I was probably still having a slow drink. And I remember saying to my sponsor, oh God, I shouldn't have said that, or I should have said this or that. And she looked at me and she said, oh, Ray, no one gives a shit. And it was like really like, you know, no, it's fantastic, really. It's the best thing I've ever done. It's given me a life. I'd highly recommend it to anyone if you know, if drinking is just costing you more than a couple of bucks. It costs me a hell of a lot. And making a list of the people you'd harmed, I mean, that's just writing a few things down. I've got that list, but. I know coming to AA has helped me stop drinking and remain stopped drinking, and it hasn't just helped me, it's helped all those in my life. You know, I used to sort of think, you know, I'm not hurting anyone, I'm just, you know, it's just myself, because I couldn't really eat or look after myself, or I was pretty hopeless near the end, but I used to think I was just hurting myself, but you don't, you're hurting everyone that your life is in contact with. It's, you know, there's a lot wider damage out there than you sort of realise. Yeah, and there is a lot of meetings around. There's nothing really to be scared of when because people just don't care. If you're an alcoholic, if you don't want to go to a meeting because you're scared what people think, or, you know, you're scared that someone will see you go in there, it's not a valid fear, because you're doing something to help yourself. Drunk is ugly, really. I'm actually been struggling to get to meetings a lot myself. I used to boast that I could do 13 meetings a week in Nelson. You know, I used to be such a show off, and now I barely get to one because I'm. You know, life's changed. I don't know how I had time to drink. I really don't, but that's all I did at the end. But now I've got jobs and I've got a little boy and I've got, you know, stuff to do, which is, you know, life's busy when you're capable, and it can be really enjoyable instead of just being drunk. I don't know how I live like that. And thank God I don't have to live like that anymore. Yeah, that'll do me. Thank you. Thank you, Kim.
Thanks, Ray.
You're listening to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on air. If you want further information on Alcoholics Anonymous or to find out about AA meetings around the country, please go to aa.org.nz.
Hi, Peter. Would you like to share, please?
Thank you, Kim. Yeah, I'm Peter. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Peter.
Step 8, made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. It sounds easy, but it isn't. You know, there are no commands in AA. There are only suggestions, and it's suggested that we do the 12 steps in order. And it's suggested in a way that we're sometimes reminded it's the same as it's suggested if you jump out of an aeroplane, that you pull the ripcord and open the parachute. So I've tried to work the steps in the way that it says to do it in the big book, and with the help of a sponsor, And by the time I got to step eight, I felt like I'd already done a lot, and it had certainly changed me. It had changed the way that I thought about myself and about other people. And I felt like I'd had what they call a psychic change, in that when I did step four and five, I felt like I was rejoining the human race. I felt like I belonged with other people. And for a long time, I'd felt very isolated because of the way that I thought about things and the way that I kept things to myself. So I got to step eight. It's not that difficult to make a list of all persons we had harmed, but what it made me do was to recognize something that I already knew from step four and five, but that I'd been a part of all the bad things that had happened in my life. It wasn't all about other people being mean to me and treating me badly and all of that stuff. If things had gone wrong, then I had a big hand in that. So some of the people that I'd harmed had done nothing to me at all. I was just a prick, really. And as a kid, I was cheeky and mean and a bit cruel to other kids, probably as a defense mechanism. But I definitely was like that. I could put those people on my list. But when it came to people that I'd had bad times with, bad experiences with, people that I felt had treated me badly or let me down, that was harder to get them onto the list, because, as I said, it made me recognize that it wasn't all them at all. A lot of it was to do with me. And then the really hard bit is becoming willing to make amends to them all. And that's why the step is not one you just gloss over in 5 minutes. Becoming willing to do your best to make up for the bad things you've done to other people is quite a hard thing, I think. However, I was able to do it, and I've been able to further down the steps to make amends to everyone still alive that I felt badly about, and those who had already passed on. I was able to do my best in my head to make amends to those people, and as others have already mentioned, to try and make a living amends and be a better person, and so not hurt other people in the way that I might have done in the past. I'm not saying that doesn't happen. My wife and I had a bit of a row last night, actually, and I probably need to be making amends to her. One of my friends this morning said, take her home a bunch of flowers, and I probably will, actually. Might not work, though. We'll have to wait and see. So that's all I want to say about step eight. But I'd also like to say that, you know, I was a heavy drinker for 35 years, and alcohol was a huge part of my life right up until I hit a rock bottom and came into the doors of AA. But I always thought that life would be boring without alcohol in it. And the reverse is actually true. You know, getting drunk every night is actually pretty boring after you've been doing it year after year. And being sober has opened up a whole lot of good things for me. I'm long retired, and I lead a very busy, active, happy retirement most of the time. And I'm able to do my best to be a little bit of a help to other people. I'm very, very glad to be sober and to have found AA and to have it as pretty much a central part of my life now. And I'll just leave it there.
Thanks, Peter.
Drinking causing problems in your work or home life? Call Alcoholics Anonymous on 0800 229 6757 or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Hi, Leslie, would you like to share, please?
Thank you, Kim. Yes, I'm Leslie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Leslie.
Yeah, I remember the first time I went to a meeting, and everybody who was sitting there introduced themselves and said, I'm whoever, and I'm an alcoholic. And I thought, oh, really? You know, it was like a tag immediately. I'm an alcoholic. because I never ever believed I was. I just knew that I had a drinking problem because for 2 years before I got to that first AA meeting, I tried mostly every day to not pick up that drink or to have a drink later or just have one drink, as we all talk about doing. But that was 39 years ago when I went into that first AA meeting. And I remember it so clearly, and yet I don't really remember a lot of it. But I remember going there. Fortunately, I knew just one person who was tagged an alcoholic, and it was he who was the catalyst for me to get to that first Richmond AA meeting. And there were not many women in that meeting at the time. In fact, I don't think at that first meeting I went, there was one, the woman who took me along there. I don't, a lot of men, I mean, times are much different now. Everybody smoked, of course, and it was quite different to how it is now. But it was still the same message. And the things I remember so strongly about it is that at that meeting, there was two men who were celebrating a fourth sober birthday. And I thought, gee whiz, 4 whole years without a drink, you know? I just don't want to die from, you know, the doctor telling me if you keep on drinking, Leslie, you will be dead in a few months. And yet I still couldn't stop. And these men had had 4 years of not having a drink. So as others have shared today, you know, about that being boring, not drinking. Well, I haven't had a drink for all those years and my life hasn't been boring. In fact, it's been exciting. It's been different because I don't drink every day. And the biggest thing is that, you know, that was my mainstay. That was my main thought. That was what I spent money on. And I don't do that anymore. But the people that I hurt and harmed that I needed to make amends to, because this is the theme today, is about making the list. But I'm going to sort of skip. I don't think I ever actually made a list, a real list, because for me, I had immediately, when I didn't drink, I was this person who had all this day, because every night when I drank, I'd black out most nights. And I had this extra time. I had all this time in the day when I wasn't drunk, because I kind of was an alkie who was always topped up. So I topped up all day, and I was, when I went to the supermarket, you know, I was, you know, floating around the supermarket, and I had that. I drove my car like that with my kids in it. Thank you, God, thank you. I never actually had an accident and they were harmed. I did have a DIC charge, of course, but that was when I was working many, many years later. But no, just the very fact that I didn't drink and I had all this time, you know, what was I going to do? So I had a job and I never lost my job, actually. I still was a functioning alcoholic. With all this alcohol in my body. And so those first meetings I went to, that's what I did. And then I started a new business and got really busy. I never started doing any steps. I knew it was a 12-step program, and that the banners were on the wall about the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was busy and I never did it. And, you know, things still happened in my life. I still had a relationship breakup, things that happened in my business. I mean, just normal things that normal people cope with. And I didn't drink. But I was still the same Leslie. I wasn't different. I didn't change. The only change was that I didn't get up in the morning and vomit bile and blood down the toilet and then start drinking my whiskey so that I could get on with the rest of my day. Yeah. And, of course, the thing is that things happen sometimes, or to me, they have, for reasons I don't know. And then one of my children, adult children then, they were late teenage children at the time, one of them put herself into a recovery place in Hamner.
And I was invited to go, asked to go down for family week. And I thought, oh, I'm too busy to go and do that. But I went. And that was kind of like a bit of a turning point for me, because I went for her for sure, but I actually ended up really going for myself. And I had a real, a wonderful walk up a footpath one day there when I was having enough, didn't want to be there any longer, had to get back to work. And, and I sort of had this, what I believe is my connection with my higher power. I've got to change. I can't be this way, you know, and here I am at a treatment centre for one of my family. And I learned from being in that place for another 2 or 3 days that I actually had to come back here and do something for myself, which was really do the AA program. No, not just stop drinking, but do those 12 steps. And so I started doing them, and everything changed, everything. I mean, it was like, I didn't do them quickly. I never did like 12 steps in 12 days or 12 months. I mean, it took time for me, but it was amazing, the impact and the effect. And it's only because of that, I believe, that I'm totally a different person to who I was when I first came into the fellowship. And life is wonderful today because of that. But with the amends making, because that is the theme today, yes, I did make a lot of amends to people, but there's still a lot of people that I don't even know who I need to make amends to. Being a blackout drinker, I mean, you know, I used to end up in places and do things and I didn't even know I did them. And I've even now, after all these years, bumped into people for whatever reason and had an opportunity to make amends to them and think, wow, that was that person that I da-da-da, whatever did or said or behaved. And it's quite incredible, really, to do that. Yes, amazing, in fact, to do that. The hardest people for me to make amends to has been my children, really, because they were only 6, 5, 4, and 3 when I started drinking, because I was on my own with them. I'd left their father, and that's why I started drinking, because I never actually drank before then. But that alcohol stopped the fear, stopped the loneliness, stopped the, everything really, and I just sort of floated away and didn't feel anything. So I started drinking at night time, of course, when they were in bed. And, I've got that gene, that genetic, I'm an addict. I have an addiction. And it's the compulsion I couldn't stop. So couldn't stop drinking, didn't even want to, because when I was drinking, everything seemed okay. And so to make amends to them for that, that was tough for me, but I've done it. And yet, even with my parents, you know, my mum and dad, they were the other two people that I had, I had them on my list, and my dad was my stepdad, and he was very cruel to me, and my sister. And I sort of found it rather difficult to make amends to him, because he used to thrash me and deprive me and shut me out in the dark and do all sorts of things. And that was how he punished me for what I did. So I kind of had this head thought that I did my time because I suffered all of that from my stepdad. But interesting how this program affected me is that I began to not just forgive him, but actually like him again and even love him. And I thought, wow, what's wrong with my head? But the thing is that, you know, the feeling of making amends for my part and what I did, and then I really expected him to do likewise, you know, that, and I can recall saying once to him, well, you used to thrash me, and he says, oh, you've never ever had a real big hiding. And, of course, I had lots of big hidings from him. But the teaching or the learning that I've had from being in this fellowship is that forgiveness is such a powerful thing. And I truly forgave him. And when he was dying, you know, I took him for a walk in a wheelchair and bought him an ice cream. And he had this bib around his neck. And I'll never forget, you know, him saying to me, well, I'm the fastest ice cream eater. And I said, no, you're not. I am. And the two of us having a joke while he was dribbling all his ice cream down his bib. You know, while I'm pushing him along the road in his wheelchair, and I can just that moment still relive it and think, wow, the power of this program, you know, makes me emotional. Would I ever have forgiven him? No, probably not. I would have hated him for his, you know, way he treated me, and not forgiven my mum because she never, ever defended me or my sister. And so those things have been taken away from me simply because of the program. You know, there's nothing else that's done it, that's for sure. So I'm just grateful that, you know, great. What am I grateful that I'm an alcoholic? I once heard someone share that in a meeting in the early days, and I can remember thinking then, wow, fancy saying they're grateful they're an alcoholic, because I certainly wasn't grateful at that point. But look, all these years later, yes, I am grateful, very grateful. And I know that, like, today, I wouldn't be the age I am. I wouldn't be and have the health and well-being that I have. I wouldn't have anything, basically, if I hadn't got to Alcoholics Anonymous. So the amends thing is, it's important. And the steps are important, the whole steps. Because, you know, I'm not the same Leslie as I was, you know, all those years ago. And so to change as a person is quite a difficult thing to do. And, well, I found it, I thought it would have been a very difficult thing to do. My head would have said, yes, I need to behave differently. But I wouldn't have naturally done that. So in that big book, our AA big book, the whole of the AA program is just like a recipe. Like, I follow recipes because I'm an avid cook and gardener, and I read a lot of stuff about how to do those things better, and read recipes and follow them. And, you know, follow them carefully as well. Attention to detail. I am as a person. I have been in the business that I've got. You know, you have to be an attention to detail person. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had the business that I had. But how to change. So I think for me, I've learnt those three things. But I had a little bit of paper put in my hand once when I went down to Christchurch to do my fifth step with an AA woman down there. And I'd written everything all out in an elaborate page upon page upon page. And she didn't even want to read it, really. And I was quite disappointed about that. But she just said, I'll just give you this little thing. And she gave me this piece of paper that said three things for me to take away from that meeting. And it was simply love self, forgive self, and trust self. And look, I would never have been able to have done those three things. I do that now. I look at that little bit of paper still screwed up in my wallet, and I am grateful. I am a grateful alcoholic, grateful that I found Alcoholics Anonymous, for the friends I have here, for the service work that I do within this fellowship, for the people that, you know, do things for me. It's just a wonderful, wonderful fellowship, really, and if everybody in the world could have a bit of it, I'm sure the world would be a better place. So thank you for asking me to share, Kim.
Thanks, Leslie.
You're listening to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on air. If you want more information or help to stop drinking, please call 0800 229 6757 or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Hi, Rebecca. Would you like to share?
Thank you. Hi, my name's Rebecca and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Rebecca.
Yes, I am an alcoholic. I have drunk my whole life. I never realised it was a problem. I just thought everybody did it. I was a student, I was traveling, I worked in bars, everyone drunk every day, and I just thought that was normal. When it comes to making amends to people, I find it quite difficult because my drinking I did in private. By the end of it, it was after a long shift at work, before I went home to the family, I would sit down and that would be my time and I would drink. And that was my way of coping with a life that I'd found myself in and I didn't know how I got there. But now looking back, it was because I made dumb choices while I was drinking, to be honest. So the biggest impact of my drinking by the end of it was I would get up 2 minutes before the kids needed to be at school, yell at them, chop, chop, quick, quick, run, run, you know, fly out the door, drop them off at school. They'd come home. I'd hardly have any time for them because I had to get back to work again. I worked evenings. And if I did have a day off, I'd be drinking. You know, I'd try and wait till 5 o'clock, but usually a little bit earlier. And that just consumed my time with them, really. I was so focused on having a drink just to get through. And they were in the way. And I remember by the end of my drinking, when it got really bad, like really, really bad, I was just, if everyone just went away, left me alone to get on with my life and do what I want, then I would be fine. And it's everybody else's problem. You're the reason why I'm like this. And alcohol was helping me deal with it. To the point where it wasn't helping me deal with it. And, but for some reason, I tried everything except getting rid of the alcohol. That was like, it has a weird way of lying to you and thinking and telling you that you need it, you deserve it, you earned it. I belong in your life. I'm your friend. I'm the one consistent that you have, and, you know, me and you together. You know, a coping and getting through this shithole of a life, pardon me. And it wasn't until my rock bottoms were where I'd say, okay, that's it. I'm just going to have one drink tonight. We've all gone through that. I'm only just going to drink this, or I'm just going to drink that, or I won't drink tonight, but then you still end up drinking. I'd done that so many times with the same result, and it just got to the point where I cannot live like this anymore, and I had to do something because I was literally dying. I was dying on the inside, and it was very, very close to physically dying. I became a completely different person when I drank. I did things that no grown woman with 3 children should do, you know, because, yeah, I got rid of my, basically what happened is I used to drink at work after work, and it was fine. It was all nicely contained. And then I got rid of my husband because I thought he was the reason. And then after that, I was like, great, I'm free. And I went drinking out in public, and then it got really dirty, really quick and really scary. but they were just faces. They were just, they weren't even faces by the end of it. You couldn't even see anybody. It was just so blah. And so I don't know where I'm going with this. Basically, who did I need to make amends to? My children at the end of it. And it's been mentioned before about making a living amends. And it's not easy, but it's getting better. It's slow because my drinking affected their lives. I was not present. I wasn't the mother I thought I would be. I wasn't the mother I wanted to be. I was just a person in the house that gave them food and put them to bed if I was home, you know, and I thought I was doing a good job. But I know that I wasn't present because alcohol was my main concern, to be honest. And like I mentioned before, they by the end of it, they were getting in the way. I'm just so grateful that I did make it into the rooms of AA that I was able to put down the drink. It wasn't easy, but it does get easier. The same things you hear everywhere, it's just one day at a time. Don't pick up the first drink because it lies to you. And I just have something in me that once I have alcohol in my body, the switch, there is no switch. It's just gone. I am just consuming until I black out. And yeah, there is no cure for that. The only way to not get that way is not to pick up the first drink. And I'm grateful that I've learned that. And I'm grateful that that there are the steps, because they help deal with the mess on the inside, not just the outside. But it does, it's been mentioned before as well, it changes you as a person. Because deep down, you weren't born to be this way. You weren't born to be this dark and sad and depressed and miserable. That's not what life is for. Alcohol is a liar. That's what I've learned. And all it wants to do is kill you at the end of the day. And through a higher power and through just the fellowship of other like-minded, like-spirited people, we've managed to get away from that. And it's so freeing and so good. And I'm just out here right now looking at the trees and the blue sky, and I would never have noticed that before. I was just in myself, in my pity, in my misery, and nothing else existed by the end of it. And it's, yeah, and there is a way through that. There is life on the other side. It's not easy. It does take a lot of help, a lot of power, your higher power, other alcoholics. Honestly, sharing with other alcoholics what you're going through is like such a powerful thing, because they all know you're not alone. There is life after the bottle. So yeah, thanks for letting me share.
Can't remember what you did last night or every night? Drinking causing you problems? Call Alcoholics Anonymous on 0800 229 6757 or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Okay, that brings us to the end of the meeting on air. Thank you all very much for your sharing and your honesty. We will now close with three of our 12 traditions and the Serenity Prayer. Tradition 1, personal recovery depends on AA unity. Tradition 3, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And Tradition 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And we will now close with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.